This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
So coming up on Pets Allowed,
our shelter operations manager, Jodie Adamo, will share her experience of assisting the fire-ravaged communities in the King Lake District following the Black Saturday fires.
CFA Community Education Coordinator Alyssa Bourne will provide vital information on how to prepare and plan for the bushfire safety of your pets.
We'll hear a heartbreaking account from Pam Ross on her son's gruelling survival and heroic efforts to save his pets when the fire hit his town of Clonbenane near Wandong.
We'll also, towards the end of the program, chat with Dr. Al Latch from the Frank Samways Veterinary Clinic about tips on how to care for your pets and how to look out for if they're heat exhausted or inhaled any kind of smoke.
Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9.
This is indeed Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9, and all throughout today we're talking about bushfires and the safety of your pets. Now, the severity of the bushfires up in New South Wales have brought back not too distant memories for many Victorians of the Black Saturday bushfires in 2009, where fires ravaged hundreds of thousands of hectares in Victoria, devastating the lives of many and leaving lifelong scars in their hearts and minds.
During this time, the Lost Dogs Home came in touch with many families who went to great lengths to keep their pets safe, while the broader community generously offered much-needed donations of blankets, pet food and supplies. On a daily basis, The Lost Dogs Home Shelter Operations Manager, Jodie Adamo, liaises with our shelters in Victoria and interstate. Now, Oz caught up with Jodie in our online merchandise packaging room, hence why you'll hear a fair bit of sticky tape happening during this interview, who shared her experience of assisting the fire-ravaged communities in the King Lake District following the Black Saturday fires.
It was pretty confronting and tragic. I think on both levels, personally, I had some pretty big things happen around those bushfires that did affect my family personally, but also as a work issue. I was actually in a town near Gundagai that weekend when the fires took place, and I remember driving home on the Sunday and seeing all the smoke, and panic sort of struck in and didn't sort of realise at what level, and you go personal and then your brain goes work. Mm. And I suppose the natural sort of assistance kicks in. So headed into work on Monday morning, and it was just all systems go. We wanted to provide as much assistance as we could, and we realised that that was just going to be difficult from our location of North Melbourne. We had staff in Whittlesea, so they're obviously quite close to the King Lake area, and they were in the thick of it and providing as much help as they could, but they were only a small team. So it was decided that I was popping in a work van, throwing as much as we could in that van in the way of food and water and medical supplies, and did a drive up to King Lake. So that was mixed emotions on the way, but also, you know, foot down and let's get in there and let's get going. But once I got to King Lake, that was really evident that things were really tragic. People had to go to a special tent at King Lake and seek approval to go in to the township of King Lake because they were so affected. So got my little wristband and did the drive, and I have to say it was just like a horror movie. Driving up the hill to King Lake was just, you know, melted signs, and there was nothing. There was absolutely nothing left, and I suppose reality hit in. And then once I got to the town of King Lake, I was shocked to see so many people still there. You know, they weren't budging. They were there to stay and provide themselves their support and their community support. And the little store was still open, and there was tents everywhere, and there was people just in a daze. Is sort of my initial memory of the day. But then, you know, your brain kicks into to let's supply that support that we were there to do, and RSPCA and many other services were active, which was great, and we attended the relief site up at King Lake, up on the hill, and just sat, and a lot of it was waiting for people to come to us. It wasn't so much being in their space and offering support. I think you had to be really sensitive to their emotions, and a lot of that was really networking with other supporters that were there in, you know, so many relief options were available, but just waiting for someone to come and ask for something. And it was generally not asked for, but you could see that there was sort of that lost look of I need something, and they had so much pride and dignity that they didn't want to ask. Mm. But being able to supply all the leads and the food and the bowls that were generously donated.
Because we're talking
brilliant.
About people's homes being completely wiped out, so even the basic necessities like leads and water bowls were really needed.
I think the first 2 hours of being on site was just about putting buckets around the town full of water, and it was as basic as that, and people were so grateful for such a minor thing.
This is the Pets Allowed Bushfire and Pet Safety Special on Joy 94.9.
We're currently hearing from Jodie Adamo, Shelter Operations Manager at the Lost Dogs Home, about her time assisting with relief efforts in King Lake following the Black Saturday fires.
Were there any sort of recurring stories or issues that you found pet owners had from those particular areas? Because we're talking about people that not only had cats or dogs, they had livestock as well as, you know, horses that they considered to be their pets. And
yeah, what's probably remained in my mind was that it hit King Lake so quick. The people that spoke to me didn't feel they had an opportunity to put their disaster plans in place. So it hit them very, very quickly, and the responsibility and the enormity of moving a horse, or you know, the cows that are in the backyard, or the goats and stuff like that, was just not an option. It was a matter of life, and I really think those options for them were taken out of their hands, whereas the other surrounding communities were able to engage in those sort of process much quicker. But again, you know, those people that didn't have the horse float at home or borrowed a trailer from someone else were stuck, and that was really, really sad to see that they were beating themselves up because they didn't have those resources available to them to save a lot of their animals. And where I say I have that personal situation is we actually lived on property, western region, never affected by fires, but had a close family friend that had one of our horses that I grew up with over the years that tragically died in the King Lake fires because they couldn't get him out.
Yeah.
So there's so many people that were affected that you just don't hear those stories of. And they not only lost a four-legged big companion that they held close to their heart, they beat themselves up because they didn't and couldn't get him out.
And they're the things that we unfortunately live with after that, you know, that's quite heavy. But some good things, I suppose, did come out of that
Absolutely.
Time with communities banding together. Well, what sort of things did you see?
Well, I think for the post 3 to 4 weeks of King Lake fires, we attended many, and I couldn't count on the hands and toes, of how many CFA meetings in communities. And it was a great opportunity for us to understand people's thoughts around their evacuation plans and really believe, and we're all pet lovers, that you're really probably not going to put your dog or your cat or your horse and the goats in a relief or a temporary boarding facility, because you actually believe yourself that you can't part with them and they are part of your family. So most people want to take them with them. And we weren't to question that, but we were able to then provide some assistance to get them ready. So what they needed to enable them to take those animals in their disaster plan. And some of that was that they had to reconsider their plan, that they had the Shetland pony or the pet pig, that meant they couldn't go to the local CFA relief centre. They had to find resources much further away. But it was great to be able to see people think outside of that square and really tailor it to what they had in their care.
And so with the fires raging in parts of New South Wales and as we head into the bushfire season here in Victoria, given your experience, what are the main things that you would recommend to people living in bushfire-prone areas?
Don't be naive. You know, I think we all can sit back and sort of, you know, it doesn't happen to me, but it's real. And I think these things happen really quickly and it's unawares. And people that live, I think, in the rural parts of Victoria and in our country have plans in place. But I think we become complacent, you know. We get past the last summer and the summer before, and we hear the messages of clean your gutters and trim the grass around the house, but you're not thinking of what's happening 50 to 100 k's away, and that 50 to 100 k's in a fire is so quick. And I think it's really important, and we stress to people is it's like having your valued items in a box that's in a safe place that you know to get to. This is more, it needs to be at your front door. You need to have that that suitcase ready. You know, you just need to be ready.
That there was the Lost Dogs Home Shelter Operations Manager, Jodie Ademo, giving us an insight into what it was like providing relief to residents during the bushfires. Kev, wasn't it just so incredible just to hear that personal but also professional account?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these kind of things touch everyone. And as Jodie said, you know, you might not have a direct impact on your family, but there is going to be someone you know that has been affected by that as well. So, look, it is a pretty heavy topic we are talking about today. So we That's do want right. to stress, you know, if you do need to speak to someone at all, call Lifeline 131114, or the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard tonight from 6 to 9, but on 9663 2939 in Melbourne, or 1800 184 527. Now, coming up, we are going to be talking a bit more about, obviously, bushfires all through today. Yeah. We've got a very personal experience coming up. So, look, some people might find this distressing. We just want to put that out there now, just so you know.
Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9.
This is indeed the Pets Allowed Bushfires and Pet Safety Special. During 2009 Black Saturday bushfires, the Lost Dogs Home came in touch with many families who wanted to share their stories of survival and how they went to great lengths to keep their beloved pet safe.
Now, Pam Ross wrote to the home to share her son Robert's gruelling survival and heroic efforts to save his pets when the fire hit his town of Clonbonnet near Wandong. Pam spoke with Oz earlier this week and gave an account of the day to show how quickly the fires moved.
Now, we do want to issue a bit of a warning because this story is quite distressing. So if you have been directly impacted by fires or feel distressed listening to it, we do advise to perhaps steer away for a few minutes. But you can also give Lifeline a call on 131114 or the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard on 9663 2939 for Melbourne residents and 1800 184 527 for Victoria regional Victorian Tasmania residents. So this is the interview that we did with Pam.
Early that morning, my son and his wife and their 16-month-old son knew that there were fires over in Kilmore, and they were shopping, so they decided to come back home again, and she packed a few things, photographs, a few photographs and a few clothes and things like that. And her and the little boy, 16-month-old son, took two dogs and they went down to stay at her mother's place in Bundoora. And my son said he would stay and watch the house to make sure everything was okay then. He was watering all down around the house and he'd cut the fences for the horses to get out if they needed to, and he'd let all his chooks out. And he was hosing around the house. And at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he could see the wind was changing. And as he lives in at the end of a no-through road, he's only got one way in and one way out. He was hosing and all of a sudden he could hear a roar. And he looked over the treetops and coming towards him was the fire. So he'd already had his cats in a cage and his ferrets in a cage, and he had his goats in the back of his car, in the back seat of a ute. So he just jumped in the car and started smashing through paddocks, smashing through the fences. He didn't know really where he was because they'd only moved in 3 months earlier.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So he started driving and he got to a gully and knew he couldn't get across the gully, so he actually had to drive into the fire to be able to find a way across to the gully, and he had the fire behind him and the fire at the side of him. He went over a very, very big mountain, and to this day he doesn't know how he did it. And as he came to the top of the mountain, he looked down and he saw the fire coming towards him as well.
Mm-hmm.
He kept driving, and just at the very last moment before he was approaching the fire, he saw a huge dam. He stopped his car in a clearing and unloaded his cats and his ferrets and the goats, which were on leads because they had collars, and he herded them all into the dam. The cats and the ferrets were just on the very edge of the dam, sort of in and out. And then he jumped into the dam and he put a blanket over his head and the heads of his two little baby goats. And within a couple of minutes, the fire just roared in the treetops right across the top of his head. He sat there for 4 hours in the dam, not knowing where he was, and until the CFA found him by accident. But he's survived. He's very reluctant to go visit that scene again, that story again. The horses died and all the chooks died except for one. And miraculously, the only thing that was left standing was the chook house, with two eggs still in the bins.
Wow.
And they weren't hard-boiled either.
Yes, so that was quite a confronting account there from Pam Ross, who we are extremely grateful to for sharing an account of her son Robert's terrifying escape and survival.
So there is some good news that came out of that, of course,
yes.
Though it does show just how scary these things are. Robert's two cats, two goats and ferrets all survived with him in the dam.
It's incredible.
It is an incredible story. Robert and his family have rebuilt their home, since welcomed new members to the family. So Gary and Glitter, the two goats, have actually sprung offspring. So they've got some baby goats now as well.
And Robert and his wife are just such animal lovers. They've actually, you know, rescued some sheep as well and done a whole heap of other great stuff. They have rebuilt, as Pam mentioned, and it is in a bushfire-prone area. But given this terrifying experience, Robert has really put together a comprehensive plan for his pets, which involves sort of he's scoped out where they live, their terrain and accessible roads. He's also looked at where he can board his pets,
it's a very, very important thing to start thinking about. We've received a message in from Leanie, who said she's loving the show, she thinks it's brilliant, so
thank you, Leanie. Thank you for listening.
And Philippe as well, who said he was loving the topic and he thought it was a great topic to cover. So yeah, definitely it's a pets allowed special bushfire and pets
program. It is indeed. And up next, Alyssa Bourne from the CFA will take us through what you need to know about how to prepare for the bushfire season with your pets. This is Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9.
Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9.
This is indeed Pets Allowed, and we're actually having a special today. It's a bushfire and pet safety special on Joy 94.9. And all throughout the program, we're encouraging pet owners living in bushfire-prone areas to start thinking about the bushfire season coming up.
This week, Oz got in touch with the CFA and had a chat to the CFA Community Education Coordinator, Alyssa Bourne, to find out what pet owners should consider when devising a plan, a bushfire plan, that is, and started off here by asking her who actually needs to have a bushfire safety plan.
Well, pretty much anybody living in a high-risk area or anyone living along the coast, anyone with grassland that might come straight up to their property, or anyone living in the bush. So pretty much everyone in Victoria needs some form of bushfire survival plan.
And so how would you suggest these residents in these particular locations incorporate their pets into their fire safety plan?
Well, it's about actually making sure they have a separate plan for their pet. So it's not as easy as just throwing the cat in the back of the car and taking off. Preparation needs to be done beforehand, and things have to be put into place. So things like making sure the pet carrier is not in the shed, it's at the front door, that you've got food, you've got water, you've got your pet medication if needed, toys, blankets. Having all those things ready to go before the fire even arrives, and just making sure that you do factor your pets into your own bushfire survival plan.
Now we know, particularly in these regional areas, pets don't just consist of cats and dogs. People consider their horses as their pets, some goats as their pets. How should people incorporate these different kinds of large pets that aren't so necessarily easy to move around and evacuate?
Look, it is a good question, Oslam. I have two horses myself and sheep and goats and chooks, and sometimes it actually comes down to the hard question of you can't physically take all of your animals with you. So sometimes hard decisions need to be made about what animals you will actually have the capacity to move or to take with you or to relocate. And those things just need to happen early on. So if you have a two-horse float and you have five horses and you know it's going to be a bad day on Saturday, you might need to start relocating those horses early on. So you need to just incorporate that into your plan, that it will take you longer to move five horses or to move five sheep or things like that. So they're the things you have to incorporate into your plan.
So you have to kind of assess it case by case.
Very much so. And that's why we'd love to be able to say, here's a one we prepared earlier, a template for your pet. But everybody has different needs. Pets are different. People are different. Some people don't have the capacity to move animals. Some animals cannot be moved. Some animals aren't great in the car. So sometimes you just can't physically take all of your animals with you. So it's very much dependent on your circumstances. And it's all about making sure you're safe. So you and your family's safety is what's paramount. And unfortunately, the animals come second. And I know that's hard to say because we all love our pets. So it's just about what you have the capacity to do. It might come down to how many children you have, how much spare space you have in the car. Those are the sorts of things you have to think about before, well before the fire arrives.
Now, you're a pet owner yourself. You have a cat. And you have a plan for your cat as well. Can you take us briefly through it?
Sure. Well, we've got a little domestic short hair called Elliot, and he's the pride of our family. We all adore him, especially the children. So we have to make sure that he's well looked after on a day. So my plan is to leave when the fire danger rating is extreme or code red, pack at the front door with all of our other bits and pieces, and that just consists of his cat cage, food, water, his records for vaccination, and also making sure that he's microchipped and permanently identified. The National Pet Registry provides free identification for cats and dogs, and that's really important to make sure that they're permanently identified or microchipped. And on those days, he'll come to work with me, or if it's going to be an extended period of hot weather and I'll be busy at work, he will be put into a local cattery, which we've already had conversations with about being there on a casual basis. So that's basically Elliot's plan for summer.
It's well in advance and it's quite thorough, and you've actually sort of sourced out contacts well in advance so that you're not leaving it to the last minute.
That's right. I mean, trying to find the cat cage, like during the winter months, I think the cat cage lives in the shed somewhere. So just the time it would take for me to get to the shed, find the cat cage, find his records, get it all together, find him, put him in, make sure he's got his collar on, make sure he's got a spare lead, all those things, that's going to take me time, and it might be time I don't have and time I should be spending on other things. And it's also really important that I have that plan in place and involve the kids so they know that Elliot's going to be safe and he's going to be taken care of, because kids are really emotionally attached to pets just like we are. And I think it puts my kids' mind at ease to know that Elliot's got his pack at the door, he's ready to go, and he's going to be safe in case there's a fire.
You're tuned into Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9, and you're hearing some really insightful and practical bushfire information from the CFA Community Education Coordinator, Alyssa Bourne.
Now, something she mentioned there was the National Pet Register, which is a division of the Lost Dogs Home. It's a free tag service as well as a microchipping service. The website for that is petregister.com.au. Definitely go and check that out. It is our bushfire pet safety special all throughout the program today. We're looking at the fairly heavy but important topic of bushfire safety and our pets. We're now going to hear a bit more of the conversation from Alyssa about the conversations that, look, we need to be having these conversations with family and friends if we are living in a bushfire-prone area, and we need to be having these conversations before the weather actually gets too warm.
During the 2009 bushfires, we saw a lot of horrible things go on, but at the same time we saw communities band together, not only within country Victoria, but suburban and country Victoria. Did you see people sort of help each other out with, you know, assisting with boarding animals that people couldn't necessarily look after in fire-affected areas?
Very much so. And look, I think communities are fantastic about coming together after the fire, but what we need to start to do is actually get communities talking about this before the fire. So if you have a friend or somebody that lives in a lower sort of suburban area who has the capacity to take your cat or your dog or your fish or whatever it might be, have those conversations with them and have those plans in place early. So if you, with the fire danger rating for Victoria, you can jump on the CFA website and it will tell you 4 days in advance. It'll give you a 4-day forecast. So you'll know with the lots of time that, you know, know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever is going to be a bad day. So you can actually call your friend and say, look, this is what's happening. I'm relocating. I'm leaving early because that's always the safest option. Do you mind if I come down and drop off my cat or my dog or whatever and stay with you for a couple of days? And you've got everything ready to go. You've got their food, you've got their medication, you've got their toys, you've got their blanket. And just making sure they're relocated and safe will put your mind at ease. And then you can actually concentrate on your plan and what you're doing with you and your family. So not only does it keep your pets really, really safe, it gives you the peace of mind to be able to go on and plan for your own survival, knowing that your pet is safe. So it's about having conversations, having the plan in early and just leaving early and making sure your pet's safe.
That there was CFA Community Education Coordinator Alyssa Bourne. Now, if you'd like to access that feature that Alyssa just mentioned before, which is so good, it's on the CFA website. It's a fire danger rating, which has a 4-day forecast. So if you want to plan ahead, simply jump onto the CFA website. It's the w's.cfa.org.au and follow the links to it. It's really brilliant.
And to find out when and where the nearest bushfire preparation meeting is happening, you can look up bushfire preparation meetings on the CFA website as well. And you can actually do that by your location. Now, they hold those regularly just to make sure that the community is aware of what's going on. That, you know, especially coming up into this warmer season, it's really, really important to do.
Don't put away your pencils and your notepads because there's quite a few more tips coming up.
Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9.
With the number of bushfires burning across New South Wales and the potential threat in the warmer months for fires in Victoria, today on Pets Allowed we're covering pet safety and fires all throughout the program. I have with me here Dr. Al Latch from the Lost Dogs Home Frank Samways Veterinary Clinic to chat a bit about heat stress and some of the issues that we might face during the fires with our pets. Thank you for joining us on Pets Allowed today.
Thank you for having me.
What are some of the risks that face our pets during bushfire season?
Well, the main risks when the animal is very close to the fire itself would obviously be burning or smoke inhalation. Having said that, though, even if they're in an area that's very hot at the time causing the bushfires, like New South Wales right now, you would be worried about heat stress in general.
What are some of the signs that we should be looking out for? So a couple of things we might be thinking about during this bushfire time especially is burnt paws or maybe smoke inhalation. What are some of the signs that we have to look out for these things?
So if your dog has burnt paws, initially all you'll see is that the skin will be really red. It might be quite swollen. It'll be quite sore to touch. And the hair may have already possibly fallen out. Depending on how long ago it happened, the skin might also already be slothing. But that does take a few hours to start developing.
Can you explain what slothing actually means?
Slothing? So what happens is basically the heat kills the skin cells themselves and they actually start to detach off the body. So you get these masses, mass areas where basically you're left with raw underskin area. But like I said, that does take a few hours to develop. And if the animal's going through that, it really should be at a vet clinic to treat those areas. And the other one, smoke inhalation. The trouble with smoke inhalation is that in the first day or so post-smoke inhalation, often the animal doesn't have any signs. They look perfectly normal. And then slowly all the effects start to occur. So that's why if you suspect it, the best thing is to just go straight to the vet so that the animal's at the vet clinic when the signs begin. But to know if the animals had smoke inhalation, I guess just signs that they've been close to a fire. So if they've got burnt whiskers or burnt fur or some soot in their fur, they often do have nasal discharge or saliva discharge. Also, if they're just kind of panting and got more of an effort to breathe. And obviously, if they've got any burns, then obviously you'd assume they've had some smoke inhalation as well. So get to the vet straight away.
And when the animal is at the vet, how would you treat these?
With burns, depending on how severe they are, affects the treatment. Initially, we do try and cool down the burn itself if it's a very recent burn. And then it's mainly cleaning up the wound, cleaning up the burn, and dressing it with an antiseptic dressing that, you know, gets changed very, very regularly. So very similar to humans. But often the animal also needs some very good pain relief because burns are obviously very painful. They often need antibiotics. Depending on how bad, they usually need fluid therapy. So a drip connected to their vein. And, yes, sometimes surgery. surgery, depending on how bad the burn is as well. And with smoke inhalation, often initially it's just monitoring because, like I said, you're not really sure of the effects yet, but you can do x-rays immediately to see how bad the inhalation has been. You can also, you know, start the fluid therapy if you do feel like they have had an effect. And if they are starting to show signs like they've got an increased respiratory effort and whatnot, you'd start oxygen as a first treatment. And then again, they usually need antibiotics and pain relief, and sometimes they need medications to open up their airways as well.
During the warmer weather, fires aren't the only thing that we start to worry about, but heat stress is another thing that can really affect pets. What are the warning signs we should be looking out for?
So with heat stress, it usually starts pretty minor. So the animal often just starts panting a lot because they're just getting hot really initially. They usually salivate. They can start to get quite listless and restless because they get uncomfortable. Sometimes they do start to get vomiting and diarrhea, and then it just progresses and gets worse and worse. So they start to get muscle tremors. They get ataxia, which means basically weakness in the limbs. They can eventually collapse, seizure, and then eventually they can become completely unconscious.
So it's a real big issue.
It's a big issue. Heat stress definitely kills animals.
And if our pet is showing some of these signs, what should we do?
So the first thing I would say is go to a vet if you really do suspect the animal's got heat stress. Obviously, if it's very, very mild, then I would say, you know, remove them from the situation itself and start slowly cooling them down. But the trick is you have to do it slowly because you can do a lot of harm by cooling them down too fast. So, you know, just a wet towel is usually enough, a bit of wet water, things like that, but no ice baths or anything extreme. Then, yeah, if the signs aren't going away quickly, then straight to the vet so we can start all the more serious treatments. So things like oxygen and fluids and medications. Yeah.
So what about avoiding it? Can you give us some tips on keeping our pets cool in the warmer weather?
Yeah, so a lot of it's common sense, you know, make sure the animal has lots of shade. So if your animal, especially if your animal lives outdoors, you have to provide shading if there's not natural shading. If it's really hot, I think the animal should be indoors anyways, indoors with you on like a 40 plus day. Obviously never leaving the dog in a car, but I think most of us are pretty good with that now. Other little things, lots of cold water, but frozen water is great. So if you actually put a full water bowl into the freezer and then give it to the dog that way, and make sure the water bowls are heavy, because that's the other thing. Sometimes dogs get left with a light water bowl, they knock it over in the first hour, and then for the rest of the day they have no water. And when it's really hot, I'd say no exercise for the dogs, like they can just do their business in the backyard or up and down the road, but no exercise. And you can obviously wet them down. So every hour or so, go out, hose them down, make them feel a bit better. And yeah, that would help as well.
Pets Allowed on Joy 94.9.
Don't forget to check out our profile page at joy.org.au/petsallowed.
Thank you very much for tuning in. And thank you to everyone. And don't forget to walk your dogs.
And pat your cats.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.